Hello! Welcome back to The Villain Edit, where two allegedly smart people talk about the dumb reality shows they watch. I am one of those people, Monty Ashley.
Hi, I'm the other one. I'm Ryus Hall.
Hi, Ryus, how you doing?
I don't know, I don't feel great about that I'm the other one thing. I think that might have been a misstep.
Well, you know, you're still a valuable part of the show. You're one of the two allegedly smart people I mentioned in the intro. Today, we are going to kind of rush through the regular shows we watch because we've got a very special feature. The queens have been announced for season 9 of RuPaul's Drag Race.
And we have opinions.
Oh, yeah. We watched a bunch of YouTube videos. And that means we are now experts. But first, let's see. We watched The Bachelor. And I got to say, I am fascinated with the way they're playing with the structure of the show. As I understood it, The Bachelor was a rigorous show where at the end of every episode, there's a rose ceremony. Some number of girls don't get roses. They go home. Maybe someone doesn't get a rose from a two-on-one date in the middle of the episode and they go home occasionally.
Yeah, that's what I expected of the show.
But this dude is just sending them home instantly in the middle of nowhere.
He's been on The Bachelor before. He's probably sick of a lot of the crap that he's seen.
Oh, he's sick of everything. He's very bad at being The Bachelor.
He is. You'd think with the practice, he might have gotten better, but no, he's awful.
Like, he actually left in tears, which I thought was something the gaggle of women were supposed
to
do.
Yeah, I thought that was the lady's job. Not that it's not okay for men to cry.
But if you're crying because being The Bachelor isn't all you were hoping for. But, like, this one lady had a little one-on-one session with him and was all, I'm worried I haven't gotten enough time with you, and it just makes me want to choke you. And then she just kept choking him.
And then she just reached out with her hand and put it on his neck, and it was obvious from the look of panic on his face that he was 100% not into it. And she just kept going. So, she's like, what, you've never been choked before? Well, you're going to love it when I choke you during sex. And he's like, ah! He was so scared. It was great.
So then he just sent her home, right there. He's cutting women left and right.
Well, he was in fear for his life on that.
She was like the third woman he sent home outside of a rose ceremony this week.
And there was that woman who's like, I'm falling in love with you. And he's like, you're out.
Yeah, she could barely get the words out before he was like, that's really sweet. I'm really happy to have shared with you. You're going home too. Because he went on a two-on-one date, sent both of them home.
Sure.
Like, he's just really rushing this. If I were the producers, I'd be worried there aren't enough women to make it through the end of the season.
Oh, there's lots of women.
Well, there's lots of Corinne and then some number of other women. And next week, she talks about her platinum vagine.
Oh, no.
Yes. Then we watched The Curse of Oak Island. The curse, as usual, is that they didn't find anything.
They did find something this week.
That's right. There were incredible discoveries promised in the TiVo episode description.
Yeah, they said there was an incredible discovery in the money pit and in the bay.
And in Smith's Cove. And what did they find in Smith's Cove?
Well, they found some rocks.
Rocks!
And they might have, according to an archaeologist, been placed there by humans.
Humans 300 years ago?
Maybe.
Well, could this be the secret box drain that was dug centuries ago to fill up the money pit?
Sure, sure. Let's just call it that.
And speaking of the money pit, they made a fabulous discovery there, too.
Oh, yeah. They found
some wood.
Yes. Mysterious wood. I don't know why it's mysterious. People have been digging for the money pit and building tunnels for at least 100 years. Finding a piece of wood shouldn't be that huge a find. But, and yet, they are thrilled by it.
And also, they met a guy. One of the things that happens on this show is, because even a show that's all filler like this can't stretch out an entire one-hour episode of we dug another hole and may have found some coconut fiber. So they always bring in somebody with a theory. And this guy's theory,
he's my favorite. This is my favorite theory guy ever.
He owns a nearby island. which he says is man-made.
And we're using the word island very loosely here. This thing is maybe, it looks like it's about 50 feet of dirt.
Yeah.
It's more of a shoal. I would call it more of a shoal than an island. But he's calling it an island, and God bless him.
And he says not only is it man-made, there's a labyrinth underneath it. And he has learned to tell how the labyrinth works from the surface level things. Like, oh, this hill means there's a chamber underneath.
Right. He found a rock that was shaped like a human foot.
Kind of.
Well, it's... So, he surmises that underneath that, if you dig down far enough, there's going to be a hollow chamber shaped like a human foot. And that this rock is just telling you that, and you're obviously an idiot if you can't tell that.
And at some point, he jumps from, here is something I found, to just describing what he is 100% certain is under Okan.
This foot-shaped chamber has a small table in it.
The table has a cup on it.
A shallow cup. Yes. A shallow drinking cup. Could it be the Holy Grail?
Almost certainly. I don't see how it couldn't be.
There's another room that has...
It was like 400 tons of gold bullion.
400 tons of gold bullion.
That's what this... If there's trees in this pattern, it means 400 tons of gold bullion.
This stretches credulity, Monty.
How dare you, Rias? How dare you? He seemed pretty sure. What I love about this whole concept is that you have to conceive of people in, like, 1740 with hundreds of tons of gold bullion who first go to unimaginable lengths to hide it. They are building multiple fake islands with labyrinths underneath to hide their treasure, and then going to even greater lengths to send clues around the world.
Yes.
Like, well, we hid this gold where no one will find it, and then we erected a 50-foot stone 200 miles away that points to it. You know, just in case.
Right. Yeah.
Then we watched Forged in Fire. And this was a really interesting episode. Although the ending was really disappointing.
It was a disappointing ending. But the episode, when they started out, they had their four usual competitors. And then they narrowed it down to two. And the two competitors were a guy who's been making knives for like 40 years.
He's
an elderly man.
69 years old. They called him a master smith, which I don't know if that is a thing, but everyone said it reverently. So I assume there's some kind of certification. He looked from the start like this was something he had done a million times.
Right. He was in no hurry when he was making his blades. He's like, oh, gotta do this. He was great.
And they said to make hatchets, and everybody kind of turned in things that looked like axes or something. And he turned in something that looked exactly like a hatchet.
And the other guy was a 19-year-old?
I believe he was a 19-year-old.
He was a 19-year-old who's going to become a professional bodybuilder.
He's on his way. This kid is jacked.
He's totally, yeah, he's pretty buff.
Now,
and I imagine that pounding hot metal out with a hammer will help with that.
Now, I will say, I tend to make assumptions about the people on this show, and they're always wrong. So when you have one old guy and a couple young guys, like one of the guys who got eliminated was clearly an SCA nerd, and I found him very appealing.
Right.
And I assumed the 69-year-old guy would be like, ugh, these stupid kids. But no, he seemed to enjoy having a kid around, and I assumed the 19-year-old, because the 19-year-old looked like somebody I would not get along with.
He looked like a jock.
Yeah, he was very
absolutely
buttoned up. He seemed very tense at first, but by the end of the episode, he was loosened up, and he was enjoying watching Doug Marcaida chop stuff up with his hatchet.
Well, who doesn't enjoy that?
And he was complimenting the other guys and how good their hatchets were. So by the end, I liked both of them. Unfortunately, the final test, they had to make a halida, which is kind of a knife on either end, and you hold
with a
the
handle
middle.
It's a handle in the middle and a knife on each end. And the knife has to be a recurve, which means it curves one way and then it curves another way.
And the 69-year-old guys looked perfect. An amazing handle, by the way.
It was gorgeous. And
again, I assumed a 69-year-old knife guy would be like, I'm not making some stupid archaic fantasy knife. No, he enjoyed doing it because it was a challenge.
Yeah, there was lots of stuff in him in his home forge. By the way, he had an amazing home forge. He has a whole separate building for it. Everything's hung up in the forge neatly. He knows where his stuff is at all times. And that was pretty awesome.
But so he comes in, they test his Halida against, I think it was against the heavy punching bag.
It was against a heavy punching bag full of rice.
And it looked great. Then Doug Marqueda takes the other guy's knife, looks at it, and says, there's a problem. Then we go to a commercial, we come back, he looks at it again, he says, there's a problem. And it's because it doesn't recurve. It's only got one curve on each side.
Yep. The knife blade is the wrong shape and he can't test it.
So that means they just don't test it and the other Smith wins, which is dramatically unsatisfying because you want to see the two knives that people just spent 20 minutes of TV time forging go against each other. But I really respect that the show would rather play by its rules.
That is true. I agree completely. But I'm still disappointed. I'm pretty sure that once the cameras stop rolling, they stab the hell out of that bag with that kid's knife.
Oh, I always hope that. Like, they chop up pigs a lot, which is viscerally cool, but also kind of a waste of a pig. And I hope there's a barbecue involved.
I'm sure that they don't just throw those pigs away.
And the guy who's just made a sword and watched Doug Marqueda chop something, that guy wants to chop something too, right?
Right. They should let him definitely have a chop at the pig.
Yeah. Like, I feel that way while watching Top Shot a lot, where there'll be an elimination where people are using Civil War Gatling guns. After the camera's turned off, everybody gets a turn on the Gatling gun, right? I mean, come on. It's a Gatling gun. Let's have some fun here. Anyway, we watched Hunted, which I am writing about on previously.tv.
I didn't pay much attention to Hunted because it really annoys me. It's not a show. I wanted to be into it. I liked the idea. I liked the premise. And then, like, they're so dumb. And
Okay. So the dumbest thing happened on this episode, which was one team is doing great. They're hidden in the woods and nobody knows where they are. The hunter team has gotten their license plate, but that's it. And then the team decides, we're hungry, let's go get some Taco Bell. So they drive in from the woods, go past some traffic cameras, which gives the hunters their location. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be clear, they don't actually have access to the traffic cameras, but by the rules of the game, if the police had been looking for that license plate, they would have gotten it.
The game tracks what traffic cameras they go past, and then gives that information to the hunter team.
Now, we know this because we're guessing, because they have not actually explained the rules. This game, I assume they're trying to make it look realistic. The effect is that it doesn't look realistic at all, and I wish they would just make all the rules public, and then we'd know what we were dealing with. Anyway, that was a really stupid thing, and they got caught. The lesson, if you're on the run, stay on the run. Don't go get Taco Bell. On the other hand, we did see the hunters for the first time follow up leads that didn't go anywhere, which helps a lot for me.
It does make it more believable.
Yeah. In the first two episodes, everything anybody thought of immediately resulted in information. And I'm not crazy about that because it's not realistic.
I don't think that's how it worked. I think that's just how it's edited.
Yeah. I'm sure they're actually trying lots of things. And then eventually someone says, oh, we have a breakthrough. But if you don't see the process of them failing and failing and failing, it just looks like you're either cheating or incredibly lucky. Next, Face Off. Face Off, they did the Monster High Challenge.
It was awesome.
Ryaz likes Monster High very much.
I do. I think it's important that little girls have dolls to play with that are monstrous. I had to make my own. It wasn't pretty.
Barbie's a vampire now. You can tell because her face is all white.
Yeah.
I liked it because the designers usually do monsters or demons or evil stuff, and I like it when they're forced to do something cute, and because this is an all-star season, nobody complained about it. No one said, oh, I don't like doing stuff out of my comfort zone. Nah, yeah, come on.
They've all done stuff out of their comfort zone on their respective seasons, so now they can just get to work.
The winners were Sig and George, whom I like the most.
They did a Laguna Blue, who is the either the daughter or the granddaughter of the
daughter of the Gillman.
Of the Gillman from Creature from the Black Lagoon. And the doll is really cute. It just has a couple little gills on it and some fins on the arms and legs. But what they did with their makeup was to make her much more, they gave her a much more fish-like appearance.
Gave her gills, gave her a weirdly shaped face, but they kept her cute.
Yeah.
Which is a challenge. The team that did the mummy, the blue hair team, so that's Kaylin and I want to say Melissa.
I think so.
They were going to do a latex face mask for Cleo Denial, who's the mummy girl. But it looked really bad. And luckily, they realized that and said, let's just take that off at the last second and use beauty makeup.
It worked really well for them. And their other makeup were basically like latex bandages that they were able to paint hieroglyphics on. And that looked really good.
The team that did the Day of the Dead girl looked good. I was a little disappointed with their sugar skull face because we watched a couple seasons of Skin Wars. And everybody who does body painting is great at doing those because you get a lot of work
right,
if you can
painting
do that.
Those. Yeah. So their sugar skull face could have used a lot more color, I think.
Yeah. But they did a really good job of embossing the bones on the arms and legs and neck.
They made her skeletal, like, arm coverings, except they were raised.
It's hard to do make a person look like a skeleton, because makeup can't actually subtract. It can only add when you put things over it. But they did a great job, and I thought it was a really fun episode, even though the judges were not there, and the judges are things I really like in the show.
Yeah, I would have liked to have heard the judges' opinions on those. I especially would have liked to hear V. Neal. Because she's done a lot of makeup that's whimsical.
Yeah, she did a lot of Tim Burton stuff. She did Beetlejuice. So whenever they say, here's a whimsical challenge, whimsical on Face Off means do it like Tim Burton.
Yeah.
And B. Neal did a lot of that stuff.
I kind of feel is a weak point of the show. Because you should stretch it beyond that. But
presumably they're going to comment on this week's stuff next week. Because although Sig and George have immunity next week, everyone else is going to be judged on next week's art and this week's, and that's what the elimination will be based on.
I would, however, like to talk for a moment about Draculaura.
Now here is Rias on Draculaura.
Draculaura was an adorable makeup, and they did some really great things with it. But dude, those fangs? I have a friend who is an expert on goths, having written books about them, and she actually looks a lot like Draculaura, so that's why I forced her to watch the show. And even she agreed that those fangs were ridiculous. They looked like the fangs from an early Hammer film, you know, where they just take a couple pieces of clay and stuck them on the girl's teeth, and they were huge and hilarious looking. I wish that one of the guys to come back this season had been that the German guy who was a tooth expert, because he would have made some great fangs.
One thing I like about the show is they have people who are experts on hyper-detailed things, like Emily, who is on the Draculaura team. She's an expert on hair stuff.
Right. Her mom owns a wig shop or something, and she has been making wigs since childhood and knows exactly how to do wigs. And the wig was great.
Yeah. I will say, although Draculaura's fangs didn't look great to me, I liked the facial expression they forced. Because the fang teeth were far out to the side and pushed past the lower lip. So it kind of forced the mouth wider into a fairly goofy-looking grin. And Monster High dolls don't look that bad with a vapid grin on their faces.
That's true, but on the Monster High dolls, they just paint the fangs on the lower lips, which is cheating.
All right. Now, My Big Fat Fabulous Life, Rias's report, because I don't watch that show. I was asleep.
Well, I don't watch Hunted very much, so. My Big Fat Fabulous Wife,
Life,
is a show that I watch because I really like the lady it's about, Whitney Thor. She's a fat activist. I felt like last season's show was all about her having health problems, which I felt, I understand that she was having health problems because of her weight, but this season they've backed off on that. They're showing her doing more personal training. The trauma of this season was she took a bunch of pregnancy tests that came back positive. But it turns out that when you have PCOS, which is why she gained all the weight, it makes all your hormones funky, and pregnancy tests keep coming back positive. So that was an interesting thing to learn. And I feel really bad for her ex-boyfriend, Lenny, who was the person who was the alleged father of the mystery child. because he's a super nice guy. And she told him, and he had had another girlfriend in the past tell him she was pregnant in order to get back together with him, so he was totally unsure. And he just seemed so nice. He was like, when she met him to tell him that she'd had the ultrasound and there was no baby, he was all excited because he'd found an awesome crib with a dragon foot under it.
What?
It's like a big dragon foot with a crib on the top.
Doesn't that just encourage nightmares?
I don't know, but I want one.
Don't tell me there's not a monster. I can. It's right there.
We could get it for the dog.
Yeah. I will say that one thing I find odd about the show is she has a job as an intern at a radio station, which is the kind of job you get on the real world when they just have to...
it's a reality show job.
When they just have to give you another set to be at. But she has a TV show. She is objectively a much bigger media star than the people for whom she is an intern
job. But she seems to take the interning job very seriously because she had to be at the station at like 3 a.m. every morning and she gets up and does it.
All right.
But yeah, I agree. It seems like a fake job. And then this week, she was out doing some interning where she was interviewing people at a gay pride festival. And one of the guys she interviewed said, "Oh, you're interviewing for radio. That's good because I'd hate to see your fat ass on TV." And I'm like, dude, her fat ass is on TV and it's awesome.
Like, there's cameras right there. You're seeing the process.
There's a television crew filming her. What do you think is happening? But like it made her cry and it made me feel bad for her.
Do you want to get into Drag Race?
Oh, man, you have no idea how much I want to get into Drag Race. How much time do we have, or do we need to split this off into another show?
No, we're just going.
All right.
So, RuPaul's Drag Race has announced the queens for its season 9 season. We love this show. I maintain it is simultaneously a parody of Project Runway and America's Next Top Model, and also a better version of both of those shows. RuPaul is a certified genius at this show.
And also at working on the RuPaul brand, because it's not just the show. Even if you're eliminated from the show, you still get to go out and do RuPaul-branded drag tours.
Oh, yeah. You go on the cruise. You go on the tour. If you have any sense when you're on the show, you're not a jerk. Because every second you are on television is a chance that you could be improving your image and brand as a performer. And you can tell which people understand that and which people don't. Now, yeah. Previously, I've been very good at predicting who's going to win. I'm in a drag race pool where I have to pick 3 people. I've never won this pool, but I usually have the winner. A few seasons ago, Jerick Hoffer, or Jinx Monsoon, was one of the queens. We saw
local girl.
We saw him in an amazingly good production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, yeah.
Directed
by local impresario and theatrical genius, Mr. Ian Bell.
Thank you. And we watched that and came out saying, that person is going to win. Comedy, drama, singing, dancing, had it all. And
yep.
Jinx won.
Yeah, and rightly so.
A lot of the time, you can tell quickly who's going to win. Like, I remember the first season I was in this drag race pool. As I remember it, we picked our queens after the first episode aired. Everybody picked Raja. Because in that first episode, you could tell, oh, Raja's winning this.
Yeah.
So
Raja had, and continues to have, amazing star power.
Yeah. So what we did was we watched all the official videos where the queens say who they are and all answer the same questions. Right. Like,
who are you? What's your influence? What makes you different?
What is season 9 going to be like?
And what is your persona?
Yeah. And then we went on YouTube because we go the extra mile. And we do.
We do it for you.
We do it because I want to win this pool for once.
I'm sorry, we do it for Monty.
That's right. And we watched some actual performance videos. We didn't... Everybody, we watched at least one video of.
Some people, we watched multiple videos because, oh my God, so amazing. One of those videos made me cry.
Yeah.
So we'll get into that later.
So we're just going to go alphabetically and give you our thoughts on everybody real quick. Let's kick off with Aja.
Aja. Aja is 22 years old and dumb as a rock.
It's not clear. I don't like being mean to actual people, but I do like being mean to television characters. It's possible that Aja's queen character is dumb as a rock.
It is true, because from what we saw, okay, according to her interview, she likes calling people out and she thinks she's crazy and fun.
But she hopes no one gets mad at her.
Her persona, as she said, is slutty Brooklyn Judy Jetson Hooker.
So we were a little worried after watching her official video. Then we watched a couple of her performance videos, and they're...
Oh my God, she is so talented and good.
We watched a lip sync of her doing a rap song, which was perfect.
Yeah, it was really hard, and her lip sync was stunning.
And she's... It's not a dance video, but she's moving in a way that you can tell she can dance. She's doing the robot, and she's just locking it in perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And a big thing for me is, especially if you watch a bad drag queen, they'll come out, do a dance move, and then realize they've picked a 4-minute song.
So they have to stomp around the stage for a while.
Yep.
This happens in burlesque also.
Yeah. Aja had a move planned for the entire song.
Yeah, she had clearly practiced every note of that song a lot. It was amazing to see, and although she might still be dumb as a rock, she's an amazing performer.
And we saw another video of hers later on that YouTube recommended because we were watching so many drag queen videos. She's the one that did the diva dance from The Fifth Element.
And it's amazing. If you get a chance to look at Aja doing the diva dance from Fifth Element, she hits everything.
So I'm a huge fan of Aja already. Her interview, she seems dumb. I don't think she's dumb.
I think maybe her persona is dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she said that her influences were Gautier and Mugler, two of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of specific fashion call-outs.
Yeah. I think that was a question that they were prompted on.
Well, I like to see it because drag is very dress-based, and I like people that know what kind of dress they're putting on, even if I don't know the details. So, who's next?
Next, we have Alexis Michelle.
Oh, her biggest competition is herself.
Dun, dun, dun. She believes that her drag is about body and being classy. So we looked up some videos for her.
She likes show tunes.
She likes show tunes, especially the Sondheim ones.
We watched her do Ladies Who Lunch, which was fine.
It really fell into what I would think would be an old school female impersonator type thing.
Yeah, like she didn't do anything with it. She just, she sang it well.
Yeah.
But she's just there singing Ladies Who Lunch.
There was nothing exciting or original about it. It was a good performance.
It wasn't campy, and I personally like my drag to be campy and ridiculous, which I got a bit of in the other video of hers we watched, which was billed as So You Think You Can Dance, which I don't know why, but what it was the witch's rap from Into the Woods, more Sondheim, and she came out all uglied up.
Yeah.
And then basically just did the witch's rap, and it was fine.
She did it well, but again, it was...
I love Into the Woods. That's not a very good song. And Well, it's not. Sondheim isn't great at rap.
Come on, it's hard to find a good rhyme for arugula.
And I couldn't tell how good her lip-syncing was. Well, she's not lip-syncing. She's actually singing. That's important to note. Alexis Michelle actually sings.
That is an important skill to have. But I'm not sure that she has...
I'm not sure she has a sense of humor. Don't get me wrong. I like Sondheim a lot. I would probably enjoy hanging out with her. I'm not sure she's transgressive enough, is that?
Yeah, she's a musical theater geek, which, yay for that. We love those guys and girls and drag queens.
Yes.
But her style seems very rooted in classic 1970s female impersonation.
Yeah, comes out, plants herself in the middle of the stage, sings a classic song, and gets off. No, as far as we could tell, death drops or wig ripping.
No.
So next is Charlie Hides,
who is 52.
Allegedly. All right. We went on YouTube and watched Charlie Hyde's videos. I'm not sure that was the right Charlie Hyde's.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be, because I did compare the pictures. Yeah. I did compare the person on that with the official pictures on the Drag Race site.
All right. So,
it is Charlie Hyde's. Does claim to be 52.
Doesn't look 52.
I'm 52.
Well, you look great.
See? That's damn right.
Charlie Hyde's appears to specialize in celebrity parodies and song parodies.
Yes.
Probably has her eye on Snatch Game.
Right. Her song parodies, we watched a couple of them. They're
bad.
Bad.
Like, I'm just going to... Charlie, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. Don't listen to this next part. They're terrible.
Yeah.
She does a bad job of lip-syncing her own lyrics. She's doing characters, which I thought was going to justify the terrible voice she's using. But unless she's using the same voice for Kris Jenner and Katy Perry.
There was a lot of obvious auto-tuning going on there.
And
I felt like this is really stupid, but I felt like all of her song parodies were really slut-shamey.
I mean, mostly Whore, which is Roar, but now it's called Whore.
And the Katy Perry song Whore. Yes, yeah, and, we all know and love it.
It featured a rhyme in which Hannah Montana is rhymed with banana.
Oh my God. Why didn't I think of that?
Nailed it. And I will say, we didn't look that hard, but we did skim. Didn't find a lot of live stuff, which worries me for this show.
Right, because because it's good to see a performer live to know what they've got in their arsenal.
Yeah. Now, Charlie does seem smart. Clearly wants to make it to Snatch Game. If she's in Snatch Game, I expect her to do well because she's got a wide range of celebrities she's got lined up.
Mm-hmm. I felt like, the only designer she called out was Philip Tracy, and that was just because she was wearing an odd hat at the time. I mean, I love Philip Tracy. Don't get me wrong. I love you, Philip. But
if you're listening, Philip Tracy.
So next up, we've got the lovely Eureka O'Hara. Her interview says she'd like us to know that she's fat.
Yes.
I'm fine with that. Said she was a high-energy dancer and a perfectionist. Her aesthetic is pretty much the same as mine, which is everything all at once and then more.
Yes. This is where I started to notice that although everybody was asked to describe their aesthetic, very few drag queens actually have a concise answer to that.
Well, I think that's good. I think that means that they cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, like very few people come out and say, my aesthetic, 1920s flapper meets Scooby-Doo.
I would totally watch that show.
There's somebody later on who says something similar to that. So we watched Eureka O'Hara's videos.
And she does have she is an energetic dancer and an enthusiastic dancer.
She's not a choreographed dancer.
I don't know if she can do choreography. I hope that she can, because I'm always rooting for the fat queens, because I'm kind of one of them.
Yeah.
And I like what she said her aesthetic was, which is everything all at once. But then when we watched her video, her aesthetic was kind of, I think it lacks...
Focus. Like she's kind of just stomping around, waving her hands, kicking her feet. And from the videos we watched...
Which were a couple of club performances.
There wasn't a lot going on.
Not really. It was a lot of the, oh my God, I'm stomping around... for 5 minutes, because this song is longer than I thought. It's like holy dancing,
and you know, oh my God, they just did a split, which is amazing in a club. Once you're on Drag Race, I think you got to bring bigger than that.
Right. Also, Asia's choreography was so good that it was really, you could tell a lot of difference.
Yeah.
So I like Eureka in theory, but I think that she kind of lacks. She seemed to lack personality, and
I like
good sense as far as what goes together to make a good drag costume.
I like that they're casting fat queens. I wish they'd just go nuts and put Jackie Hell in there and see what happens.
Jackie Hell knows better than to go there.
Next is Farrah Moan, and that's spelled F-A-R-A-H, like Farrah Fawcett Majors, and Moan, like, oh.
Hmm. That's the kind of moan.
Yeah.
I think she means a sexual moan, but it's kind of the sad moan, because she's from Vegas.
Yeah.
And her aesthetic is fetish showgirl.
What she said was, old Hollywood meets retro glam, which sounds great, but those are the same thing.
Yeah, that doesn't really mean anything. And then she said, fetish showgirl. So we watched a couple of her performances, and here's what I have to say. She is beautiful.
Yeah.
Even out of drag, this is a very attractive person.
Which is important if you're going to watch them on television.
Which is important. But all of the drag performances seem to be more about moving the costume around than about having personality.
Now, we were pretty down on her when we watched it. This was one of the videos labeled Showgirls, which I believe is a club in Vegas.
Yeah.
We watched, as part of this process, we watched a few more videos set there. And hers was actually the best one. Because it looks to me like Showgirls is just a place where you walk up and down the catwalk, shaking what you got a little bit, and you constantly have to stop and take money from people.
Well, yeah, that's probably why people like to go to Showgirls, is because they get a lot of money.
Well, and sure.
I cannot blame them.
I agree with that, but all of Farrah's videos seem to be there, and they're all pretty much the same. And for a Showgirls video, which I now consider a whole genre, it's fine. She's good, but I do not like that type of drag. I want to see something.
Yeah. I want to see more than pageantry.
Yeah, I want to see a show.
So next up, we're going to go to someone who does put on a show, which is James Manfield. Now, James, I like him a lot.
I like the old school drag name.
I like the old school drag name. He has a character voice, which kind of annoys me, but so did Jane Mansfield, so I'm willing to allow it.
Taking a shot at Jane Mansfield.
The first person I thought of when I saw him was Lady Bunny, because he also does the gigantic wigs.
Yeah, he's got kind of...
But
he's not fat, but he's got kind of a round face.
Yeah.
He claims to be very competitive, and for some reason takes a shot at Vivacious. Of all the easy targets.
I'm not sure that was a shot. I think he was just using the word vivacious in a sense.
Well, in that case, good job.
Okay. Let's see what we got.
We watched a video.
Watched a couple videos. Mm-hmm. Oddly, they were very puppet-centric.
Yeah. James did a lip-sync of Julie Brown's Dr. Demento classic, Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun.
Right.
Love that song.
And there was... There's two people in it. There's the narrator and the homecoming queen. So the homecoming queen was a puppet, kind of a homemade puppet.
With a gun. And
much of the choreography was just the puppet pointing the gun at the audience while she ran around with it. She did have it in her hand, so it was kind of a, what's that play with the puppets?
Avenue Q.
It's kind of an Avenue Q situation.
Yeah, this really felt like 30 seconds of good idea stretched out to like 3.5 minutes. Homecoming Queen got a gun as a plot. It takes forever. So there was a lot of time when James had to just stand there while the puppet pretended to shoot people.
Right.
And I was disappointed that the puppet didn't lip sync the background singing, because there's a lot. It's a parody of a teen death song. So there's a girl group in the background.
I had a feeling that that was more of a technical malfunction with the puppet.
What?
Because she did at the first verse and then kind of cut out later. Right. I don't know.
And the puppet did do the "I did it for Johnny" thing at the end, which...
And as much as I didn't think that was a great performance, I did feel as though, thank God, somebody's not just walking out, shaking their butt, and going back, and then doing a poor lip sync. It was a decent It was a decent lip syncing job, and there was some creativity there, which I liked. And I'm pretty sure that of all the people on the show, James Manfield is probably the one I would get along with best.
Yeah, that's based on that interview where she said that she's based on all B-movies from John Waters to Russ Meyer. Which I objected to on the grounds of that not actually being that wide a range.
Yeah, but I like her that she understands the trash aesthetic.
Yes, exactly.
So I hope she does well. I don't think she's going to win, but I hope she sticks around for a while because I do really like her.
Yeah. Next, Kimora Black, who we also saw in Showgirls videos.
Yes.
Her interview at the beginning was mostly about how hot she is.
Yes. She's very interested in telling people she looks like a Barbie.
And
her aesthetic is sexy showgirl. Like, unlike...
because, finally!
Because there's so many unsexy showgirls. Thank God someone finally broke through.
I personally think she's wearing... I know how this is going to sound. She's a drag queen, whatever. I think she's wearing too much makeup. Like, it's... There's just a flat whiteness. Okay.
Disagree, although there was so much makeup that I could not determine what her race is. I thought maybe she was African-American or Asian.
This is getting weird.
It's getting weird, and I don't think it's really relevant, because what is relevant is that the ass padding she was wearing was not a shape of ass that occurs in nature.
Yeah.
It was super wide and super flat in parts. It was it wasn't good. And her she's not good at lip sync at all,
and just didn't from the videos we saw didn't have an act.
No, she just stomps around and lip syncs
and takes people's money, which, you know, good gig if you can get it. I hope you've got more in the tank because you're going to need it. Who's next?
Mina Bonino Brown. Her aesthetic is Club Kid Space Alien. I love that aesthetic.
Nina claims to be a nerd. Is definitely a weirdo.
Yeah, we definitely... At first, I didn't like her. But then when we watched some videos, she totally grew on me. This is a drag queen who has watched Paris Burning and taken it to heart.
We watched Nina's season 8 audition video. And my favorite part of that was, what does it take to transform me? Makeup! Hello! It ain't gonna take mud and clay.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
I like anyone with a sense of humor... Especially a sense of humor about this, which is an essentially goofy profession.
Mm-hmm. And the video we watched was, it was really crazy and unprofessional in the best possible way. I really liked
it. Yeah, it was something
I wasn't sure if she was dressing up as a woman, but whatever she was dressing up as, I'm in favor of it.
It would have been a great show to be at in what I assume was a tiny, trashy bar.
Yeah, yeah. That's the kind of drag I like, so I have a soft spot for
it. We really like Nina. I'm not sure I picked Nina to go very far.
No, she's like Acid Betty a little. It's the same basic face shape and makeup aesthetic, but I don't think she's as good at the makeup as Acid Betty is. Acid Betty was astounding.
I really liked Nina's makeup in the interview.
That was pretty good. In the official one. Yeah, yeah. She's not afraid to glue things to the side of her head.
Yeah.
That's what I like in a woman or a man.
Or a dog. Really. Whatever you got.
Yeah.
Peppermint. Peppermint is a trans woman, which I personally am fine with being on this show. I think it would be great to just have...
A season where there were, what, like just women on it?
I do not... When you're doing drag, you are performing femininity.
Right.
Or really, a lot of times, performing a parody of femininity in such a way that I don't think it really matters what the person under the makeup is.
My notes on Peppermint are, she seems nice.
Yeah.
She claims that her look is classy chic, but that's not what I saw in her music videos. Her music videos was more... lingerie.
Yeah. She called herself fierce and fabulous, which at this point I think kind of means you have no new ideas.
Yeah. She also didn't strike me as a performer. She struck me as, and this is also something that she said in some in interviews I've seen, as more of a performing artist. I think she's in this show so that her songs get more play in clubs.
Which I don't know if that's going to work, because I'm not sure even RuPaul's songs get played in clubs.
I don't know. I don't go to clubs that play songs. I'm old.
I found Peppermint pretty boring, which is the biggest sin for a drag queen.
Yeah, I found her nice, but vanilla.
But now, let's take a hard left turn.
Now we're going to talk about Sasha Velour.
In Sasha Velour's interview, says, how'd you pick this name? Well, my actual name is Sasha, and people used to tell me it's a girl's name, so I said, fine, I'll just make myself a girl. Velour is a cheap imitation fabric, which is a perfect metaphor for drag.
Absolutely.
Talked about how her favorite part of the transformation of drag is the physical ritual of painting her face.
Which is awesome, because as a goth, I totally am into that and understand that 100%.
Yeah. So after the interviews, I was thinking, this could be someone I like. I think this was a smart person.
Right. I thought, yeah, she seems intelligent and well-spoken. She was my favorite from the interviews. And she said that her aesthetic is Philip Tracy meets Club Kid. And what she was wearing on her hat, on her head, may have been an actual Philip Tracy hat.
Yeah.
It was beautiful and perfect and crazy.
And then we watched a couple of her videos.
Oh my God.
These videos are amazing.
We fell down a rabbit hole. We had to keep watching them. We could not stop watching her videos.
Like, a lot of these people, we watched two videos, we were like, well, that was okay. Can you do anything else?
Yeah, that's what they do. They do club stuff. Sasha Velour's stuff is art.
We just wanted to watch more of it.
Yeah. She did a video for the Kate Bush song, This Woman's Work, that made us, well, it made me cry.
I teared up, certainly.
It made me tear up. It was such it was a crazy...
It's a performance art thing that combines lip sync, because that's basically what's happening, along with projection, but the projection is being projected onto Sasha.
And while she's singing.
So she's kind of wrapped up in a white sheet, and that's what's giving her the body.
But yeah.
And later she takes the sheet off.
And they're projecting, and the projection is dressed exactly the same as her. And then there's a part in the song where the projection walks away, and it's just breathtaking.
And, and she's interacting with her projection. And when she's lip syncing, she's not just mouthing the words.
She is performing the song.
She's not, it doesn't look like she's just singing the song. She is emoting. She's getting what the song is about to you, which is so rare.
Yeah, and I see her more as a genderfuck artist, because I have not seen her wear a wig.
Yeah.
I've
seen her wear a crown.
Stop, you're going to make me cry again.
It's so good, you guys. Listen, I don't care. Sasha Velour is my number one pick.
Yeah,
because even if she doesn't win, this is going to raise her profile. And
yeah, and she's
and now that we've
gotten
to this point, we can say that the diva dance that we watched Aja do was at Sasha Velour's night.
Right.
So we know that those two know each other and are probably going to be kind of a clique. And I'm okay with that, because that's the clique you want to watch.
Yeah, because they're amazing.
They've got it. They have every second of their performance planned out. And not just, I know what I'm going to do, but I know why I'm going to do it and what effect it's going to have on the audience.
Yeah, it's scary good, you guys. You got to check it
out.
So next up, we have Shea Coulee.
Shea Coulee claims to be able to do anything.
She can sing, she can dance, etc.
She's equal parts Bougie and Benji.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, sorry, we're not that cool. I mean, I get the general.
But she was bringing African goddess realness to her RuPaul interview, and it was gorgeous.
Did crack a joke for the question of what is your transformation like? She clearly, they kept this in the interview where she pauses for a beat and then says, I woke up like this. What is drag? Which I thought it was a great joke.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. So she has a sense of humor. What I saw of her performance videos weren't very memorable.
They were fine. Like, she does Nicki Minaj, which is not easy.
Her lip syncing is good, because I can't...
See?
See? I can't even talk real words.
But she's keeping up, and she's projecting an emotion, but it wasn't super memorable. She seems fine. Seems okay.
Yeah. Oh, she's not here to make friends, though.
Oh, well.
Which, that's probably a mistake, because if you're on Drag Race, you're going to be working with these girls a lot in the future.
Yeah.
So you should definitely be there to make friends, ladies.
Yep. You're going to have a lot of downtime where, because of previous queens, you will not be allowed out to hang out with your real friends. So make friends with these girls.
Next up, we have Trinity Taylor. She's a pageant girl from Florida, and all that that implies.
I don't know what that implies. Are Orlando pageants somehow special?
No.
No.
She makes her living doing makeup, but she doesn't like the makeup that she has to do because it's standard. It's standard beauty makeup.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like her day job is at a Mac counter or something, but she's older than I would have thought.
But she might be one of those people that does fancy wedding makeups and stuff like that. There's a lot of freelance makeup work to be done in Florida.
Yeah, she would prefer to do exciting, dramatic makeup, such as on her face, which I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah, and... Yeah.
She is from the arm-waving school of lip sync. She's got some choreography. I will say it looked to me like she was concentrating awfully hard.
Yeah, she was trying really hard on her choreography, and you could tell it in her face, which is not what you want to see.
Yeah. She did not make a big impact. I will say by this point, we were starting to fade pretty hard.
It's okay. We've only got...
Just one more. Just Valentina.
Just one more.
Valentina said, "I'm a little girl."
And that was horrifying.
And if it was horrifying on purpose, she's great.
Exactly. And she said her inspirations were telenovelas and Almodovar films. Both of which are very, would be great inspirations, especially if they're doing an acting challenge.
I'm not sure that Almodovar films are a great way to dress.
They are if you're in drag.
I saw Holy Mountain. That guy's not wearing anything.
That's Yatterhouse.
Oh no, I ruined everything.
No, Almodovar did win right, the Virgin of Nervous
Breakdown. I'm a fool. Valentina knows more about fashion than me. You know, like, previous people said things like, my influences are McQueen. She referenced a specific season.
Yeah, she's like, this is spring, summer 2015.
Prada. Which?
That's the look I'm going for.
Okay. I like someone who knows what they're doing and has a plan.
Mm-hmm. I thought that she looks kind of like a Latina Nina Hagen.
Yeah.
But that might just have been the crazy wig she was wearing.
I'll say super pretty.
Very pretty.
That certainly counts for something.
When we watch some videos, my note here is taste level questionable, talent also questionable.
She lip-synced to MacArthur Park, which, I mean, not the original, it was at least a disco version, but come on, MacArthur Park... We have things to do. We can't be here all day.
Yeah, she did a lot of stair work in the video we saw.
She lip-synced okay, but very naturalistically, which meant that you
couldn't... Right, she didn't move her mouth very much when she lip-synced.
As opposed to Aja, who, especially in that Diva Dance one, is overplaying everything so you can see the lips from the back of the room.
Yeah, which I think is a good performance thing. I think that I like Valentina as a concept. I like the crazy Hispanic Almodovar, brightly colored telenovela aesthetic.
Yeah.
But then I didn't see her demonstrating that. She was wearing a bright yellow jumpsuit, which was very flattering because she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see her do something different. And if she had done a lip sync to a Nina Hagen song... I probably would love her for the rest of my life. So get on that, Valentina. Yeah.
So wrapping up, I think the prettiest two, in my opinion, are going to be Farrah and Valentina.
Oh, yes. They're both gorgeous. But
Kimora said she was pretty, did not appear to be as pretty as those two.
It was hard to tell.
But the two I found most appealing and talented are going to come as no surprise because I won't shut up about them. Aja and Sasha Velour.
I think Aja, Mina, and Sasha are the queens to watch.
Do you think that should be my team?
No, because they're too good.
But I don't want to root for people. Like, last time we looked at videos and Bob the Drag Queen was amazing. And I was like, were just picking Bob the drag queen. Everybody else did too. And then Bob won because you could tell a mile away.
Yeah, I would take those guys as your team.
All right.
They're my team.
All right. So we're going to go with Aja, Sasha Velour, and Nina Bonina, and then a whole bunch of other words, Brown. And I think that's going to wrap it up for this week.
I think so. We've gone way over our normal time.
Yes, this is a double length episode.
Ooh, double length. All right. So thank you for tuning in.
We still don't have a sign off.
Sashay away?
No, I think that's already being used.
What?
We need one so that I can maintain my sense of smugness over shows that have bad ones. On Fortune Fire, it's your weapon did not make the cut. See? Flawless. Maintains the metaphor perfectly.
All right, I'll work on that.
All right. Okay, bye. Oh my God, I can't find the stop button. Okay, bye.